Welcome to episode 42 of Carlene's Anime Corner, a St. Johns County Library podcast. I'm here today with Zoe, and we are going to bring you an older anime title that has a new release this year, though, so it's been back on everybody's thoughts.
I still can't believe this is an older show. It doesn't look like it at all.
No, it's amazingly well animated and is definitely kept up with the times.
Absolutely.
I mean, I say older, but it's like within the last decade. So
like 2017.
Yeah, so it's not like the 1980s stuff I've been watching at home recently.
Older in the same vein that season one of like Attack on Titan is older.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Zoe, it's been a bit since we've been together because you had a family vacation for our last recording, so you weren't here. How have things been going?
It's been a lot. Started a new year of high school and a lot has been happening. Been very much breaking into that Crunchyroll subscription I got.
Been enjoying that a lot. Did you watch a lot of anime this summer then?
I did. A lot of the smaller, shorter ones. I didn't want to get too invested into a big, long series. Mostly just like the one and done stuff.
We're going to save that for our next recording.
I'm not
looking forward to
that. No, I'm not.
Yeah, and actually you texted me that you were watching the show we're going to talk about today, which is why I was like, well, do you want to change what we originally planned and do this instead?
I have a lot more to say about this one than the original, just saying.
Okay, this is one of my favorite series, so I was more than happy to rewatch it. I still haven't gotten past the first 12 episodes, though, because I keep sitting down and rewatching the first 12 and never getting on to the next part. So I'm going to make a goal next time you and I meet. I will have finished all of this series.
Even season two?
Even season two. I'm going to sit down and watch my way through
season
it.
Season two kind of put me off, but all right, you do you.
Yeah, I'm hoping season two can still pull it off. I'm hoping.
Yeah, I don't know.
So
You have season one on box, so might as well be more acquainted with season one.
Well,
have we said the name of the show we're reviewing?
No, because we are waiting to do that until I actually give the summary. So, nerdy things. Have you been doing anything nerdier than watching all of Crunchyroll?
I picked up Fire Emblem Three Houses, which is a game that I have not expected to get so into, but I am on my fourth playthrough of it, and each playthrough is about an hour long. Wait, no. It's about 50 hours.
I was going to say, I don't think Fire Emblem is an hour long, no matter what version you're doing.
I had the number 59 in my head, and I forgot that meant 59 hours and not 59 minutes. So I've been going down the Three Houses rabbit hole. I am definitely a little obsessed.
Well, I started two new games, and then I promptly have had really bad headaches, so I haven't been able to look at a screen. But I got Baldur's Gate 3.
I have heard a lot about that one.
Yes, definitely rated mature, so be warned if you're going to play it. But if you are a 5th edition D&D person, it follows all the 5th edition D&D rules, so I get to feel like I'm a player instead of having to DM all the time. And I'm playing my bard, and I keep failing my persuasion rolls, but when you succeed on those persuasion rolls, boy, you can say anything to anybody. It's wonderful. But you just got to stop failing them, which I keep doing.
So it's like a virtual D&D?
It is a D&D adventure, but they based all of the roleplay literally off of 5th edition rules. So it's like, it's got the distance rules, it's got actual dice rolling on things, and they give you conversation options when you're talking to other characters. And it's kind of cool because I'm playing a drow bard. And I'm also playing a certain type of drow, a Seludin drow, which is not one of the ones that follow Loth. I'm actually from a different city of drow. So sometimes I have options that are literally meant for, you can only say this if you're a drow Siladin, or you can say this no matter what character you are, or you can only say this if you're a bard, which is kind of cool.
Interesting. On topic of D&D, though, I am DMing for my club. My first meeting of the year is tomorrow, and I haven't planned yet.
This sounds a lot like my D&D session. It's awesome. Start.
And I've been replaying the same fantasy game to see different perspectives on the same horrifying continent-wide event, and it tears my heart out every single time I watch the same things happening.
So I've heard Baldur's Gate, it's really easy to die, and I've only played 6 hours, so I have not yet died. And I just figure every time I die, I'm just going to create a different character and try and take a different path. Because apparently there's 17,000 different endings.
Okay.
Now, some of those endings are, like, just a smidge different than another, but I'm like, because you can play all different races, all different classes, all different everything.
It sounds like a massive game.
It is huge. I had to buy a new hard drive for my computer so I could play it.
I don't think I'm going to be able to play this one then, because I don't have I don't have computers like that.
You have to have a 150 gig solid state drive. 150 gigs free on a solid state drive to play this game.
Dang, okay, I guess that's one that I just can't play.
I got a
laptop.
My computer could barely run it, and I had to install a new hard drive so I could actually store the game. So. Yes, we have talked enough about nerdy things that we're doing that are not anime related. So let us go.
Sort of.
Into our anime review, I am now going to say what the anime is and give a short summary of it. We are watching Ancient Magus Bride, and Zoe watched more than me, but I've seen through the first 12 episodes.
The Ancient Magus' Bride.
Yes, and I've watched the first 12 episodes of the first part of season one. And Zoe, you've watched all of season one.
All of season one and like two episodes of season two.
So we're going to, occasionally you might hear me tell Zoe, stop talking about that. And that's because it's something I don't know about yet. And I want some surprises left in my life.
It's been a hot minute. So I'm going to try my best to not go into too much detail if I think I'm going down the wrong path.
So this story is about a girl named Chise Hattori who can see Fae.
And she attracts Fae.
And she attracts them, which is really terrifying, because not only can she see them, she also attracts them. And because of this, her family home life just fell apart and went terrible in very, very dark, very, very horrible ways. And she is ready to commit suicide when this mysterious stranger says, if you're going to take your life, why not sell your life?
Because apparently people like her, I think they're called Slaybeggy.
Slaybeggy.
Are incredibly valuable.
And incredibly rare. So, she is bought at auction by the Thorn Mage, Elias Ainsworth, and...
For £2 million, I believe.
Yes, for quite a bit. And her life gets very interesting.
See, the thing about this show is I adore it. There's a lot of things I love about it, but there's always one little tiny thing that's a little iffy. You kind of got to look past it.
Let's say the buying of a person.
The buying of a person, the age of said person being bought. She's like, what, 15,
16? 16. I think I can overlook the age a little bit because we are in a fairy tale world. And this is definitely a fairy tale thing.
It's very, very fairy tale, especially with the mage, Elias.
Yes. Go ahead and give your 5-star real quick.
I would give it... this is hard. This is really hard because I love it, but also that one thing. it's like a little thorn in your shoe. You keep forgetting about it until it shows up again. You're like, ah, wait. I guess 4.5. And I give it a 4.5 because of just that one little thing. But everything else about this show is downright gorgeous.
So I'm actually a little bit more forgiving of the age gap and the weirdness in the show because we're dealing with, I think, some extenuating circumstances that you normally don't find in anime. It's not like other anime that have irritated me more about it.
Thinking about it, I'll upgrade it. 4.8.
See, and I'm going to give it a solid 5. At least on the first 12 episodes, solid 5. Now, it might downfall from there because Attack on Titan, you know, that first season, fabulous. And then it started, I think, kind of losing ground.
I think season one of Attack on Titan is the best season. Just saying.
The first 12 episodes, at least, solid 5 for me. Animation, storytelling.
Music.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this series was gorgeous all around.
Absolutely beautiful.
So I'm going to start with a little bit of background on the series. So this series was based on a manga by Kore Yamazaki. And the first fact that got pulled up on the internet every time I looked up this author was the fact that she was born in Hokkaido, which is the far north area of Japan. It's a little bit like saying you're born in the far north of Canada. It's known for being cold, snowy, and cold. Every anime I watch that talks about Hokkaido, it's like, it's cold. I'm just like, okay. But... I found an interview she did with Forbes back in 2017, and so let's pull in a previous episode where she actually said Trigun was one of her favorite manga.
Ooh, good choice. Good choice.
Well, not anime, but manga.
I read a bit of the manga.
Good choice.
I've ordered the first volume of the manga in deluxe format. I'm looking forward to that.
I've actually found some random volumes here and there at like different libraries.
Oh, awesome. And then in her interviews, they asked her, why did you choose to place the ancient Magus Bride in England? Because that's one of the things about the show. It definitely solidly takes place in like picturesque English countryside.
And all of the mythology and crazy
fantasy. It's very European.
It's very European, like pagan mythology with the fae and dragon and all that stuff.
And she said she grew up reading a lot of fantasy books about fairies, and a lot of them took place in England. It was a place that was very close to her heart. Ooh. So I love that. As we were talking about earlier, the first season of the show came out in 2017, and season two just released this year. And the first season was animated by Wit Studio, and also apparently Production IG. I have no idea how much the balance of animation was done between the two, but these are both excellent studios.
And it shows.
Wit Studio is the one that's responsible for Attack on Titan. Another favorite anime of mine, Kabunari of the Iron Fortress, which if you haven't seen that, I highly recommend. Hozuki's Cool-Headedness.
I have that one on
Disc. I love that one.
I have it on Disc.
Very, very Japanese mythology, that show. Because
yeah, they have to put a lot of like
explanations.
It's kind of hard to watch it because of how much text is on the screen.
Yeah. Vinland Saga.
Oh.
Again, another big title. They also animated Spy Family.
Of course.
So, I mean, this anime, we have been leading up to it with everything we've been doing so far. So, season two was animated by a different studio. They're being done by Kafka Studio.
I did notice it was a little bit less, like, shiny, I guarantee.
But one of the people who used to work at Wit Studio and worked on Ancient Magus Bride created Kafka Studio, so it still has a tie, and the only thing they've done so far has been Ancient Magus Bride, so we can't really compare them with anything else.
The only difference I see is that it's a little bit less, I guess, sparkly.
Okay.
There's not as much like a gloss on everything.
As I said, it sounds like at least the new studio that picked it up had a history with Ancient Magus Bride and is actually still cares about the series, because sometimes when anime switch studios shows, unfortunately.
So can we talk about Chisei?
Well, let's start. You wanted to talk about the opening song, though.
Oh, I did.
And I think this is probably the right place to do that.
Okay, so I am a huge sucker for like really good like guitar, like acoustic guitar, flamenco guitar. If it's fast and it sounds great, I'm gonna lose my mind over it. And the intro.
The intro on this definitely has really good guitar music.
The music is great. The first 15 seconds of the intro. And the vocals.
Yeah, very good.
Those chanting vocals in the first minute of it. I'm like...
It instantly makes you get this like mysterious feel, but also this energetic feel.
Like it very much leans into like the whole mythology and especially the whole fae aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like a fairy tale.
So I will say my one complaint with the opening song is not so much the music; it's the visuals they put with the music.
Yeah, they kind of spoil a moment.
Yeah, well they introduce like every single character you see in the next 12 episodes, and I feel like that was a little bit too spoilery. And there's a huge moment that happens in the 12th episode that they literally show in the opening that I was like,
they even reuse the footage.
Yeah, and I was like, I would not have done that. I think they gave too much away in the opening.
It's still gorgeous,
but I feel like that balance of getting people to want to watch it and giving away too much, I think they veered a little too far on the giving away too much.
Everything else about it though.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I'm closing song mind. Didn't really grab me.
It's okay.
I pretty much skipped it every time.
It's okay. I listened to like a little bit of it every time. But then I skipped on.
Yeah.
It's nothing remarkable.
No. It was just closing song. So let's talk about our two main characters, Elias Ainsworth and Chisei Hattori.
Chisei is not in a good place.
She is not in a good place for almost this entire series.
Yeah. I think the whole thing with her is that she is basically learning to like grow and get and just kind of heal from everything she's been, but not in the best way sometimes.
Full spoiler alert here. Chisei, what we find out about her background is she keeps having nightmares about her mother because her mother actually tried to strangle her, said she wished she hadn't been born, and then committed suicide in front of her.
Yeah.
Her brother and her dad just disappear. We don't know exactly yet what happened to them. Possibly it'll show up later. And then her extended family that supposedly was taking her in pretty much didn't want anything to do with her because she was too weird. because she keeps seeing all these things, and they're attracted to her.
These like fae creatures are attracted to her based on just how she is as a living person.
And this makes, and so you kind of understand why she has gotten to the point she doesn't value her life anymore. She doesn't see any joy in the world anymore. All she sees is this horribleness, and she's ready to jump off the school roof.
Until some random dude shows up and he's like, hey, you got some value to some people.
Yeah, and so, and I'm still not quite sure what her thinking process was. I think a part of her really just didn't want to die, but wanted to have some kind of purpose or some kind of answers.
She just wanted to have some kind of value.
Yeah, she wanted to have a value. And so she literally, of her own free will, signs this form saying that she can be sold at auction.
And that's what happens.
And that's what happens. She sold herself.
She sold herself.
I love the way Elias shows up at this auction. He just, like, walks up to the stage and says, she's mine.
And we should clarify that Elias is not a regular person.
No, Elias is, like, 6.5 feet tall with a
giant cow skull for a face.
Not even quite a cow skull, because it's got way too sharp a teeth.
It's like a weird mixture between a cow skull and a wolf skull.
Yeah, and it's got horns that are almost more, not cow, but
like an antelope almost?
Yeah, more antelope-like.
They're curled. They're curved. They point out like a bull's coin sign. He's got a little veil that goes over his face.
Yeah, and he wears a little veil that he hangs over the skull face that's tied onto the base of his horns. He is just a really cool design. He has a little bit of, you know how some of the British shows, they show like the robes that professors wear at like Oxford and stuff? That's what his outfit reminds me of.
His outfit kind of reminds me of Koro Sensei from Assassination Classroom.
Yeah, again, those,
but without the hat.
Those kind of scholarly robes type idea.
He's got a little little gem necklace.
So this transition might be a little weird, but the computer suddenly started overheating on us, so we're back again.
90% sure it was going to explode for a minute.
Yeah, it suddenly revved up like it was about to take off.
And it felt hot enough to cook eggs on, so...
But we just described what Elias looks like.
And it must be terrifying for Chise, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's even worse, because apparently he is a mage, and his powers are shadow and thorn related. So let's say, what can be darker and creepier?
Yeah, a man, a giant 6.5 foot man with a skull for a face, an incredibly deep and intimidating voice, glowing red eyes, a veil over his face, and has apparently the audacity to just walk up to the stage, look down at Chise and go, yeah, she's mine.
The auction's over. Here's £2 million.
And I should also mention that Chise is wearing like a weird white gown with a collar around her neck. It's really weird and creepy.
Well, and so what Chise looks like, she's pretty much your typical 16-year-old girl, except for she's got bright red hair and green eyes.
And she looks, her face, her neutral face expression looks very sad.
Yeah, she just always looks slightly depressed.
It's real. She looks tired when she's happiest, and mm-hmm. at her worst, it's downright heartbreaking.
Which we do find out part of why she's so tired is because she is actively dying, in essence, because of what she is.
Yeah,
because
her, as a slave beggy, she has this thing where she's constantly pulling in magic from around her, but because mm-hmm. of her, but because she's human, her body can't like process it or hold on to it without it, you know, making without it having an effect on her.
Which she doesn't find out until like halfway through the 12 episodes we watched, and it was supposed to be like this horrible revelation to make her reject Elias because he didn't tell her about it. And I love Elias's response: I didn't tell her because it's not part of my plan. And I was like, oh my gosh, you are such a vain, proud mage.
Yeah, Elias is a very complicated character.
He is. I like him. I mean, he...
I do like him. I can tell that there... He's definitely has some problems, but he's got a lot of good stuff about him, too.
Thing is that they literally say he doesn't understand human emotion. Like, he can see it, but he doesn't understand it.
He one thing to be sure, he is not human. He is half human, but his mindset is definitely not human.
Not human. Well, and we find out later on he possibly even ate humans at one point, so...
And Chise is not as worried about that as you'd think, to be honest.
No, she's not. Which
is really concerning, but it makes sense.
It does, actually. Because the way they set up Chise, you kind of understand why she is not bothered by a lot of things that a normal person would be bothered by.
Yeah, it's just one of the main things that I see about this show that I do really like the way they portrayed it is that Chise, over the course of it, is learning more and more to just value herself.
Yes, and that's what's weird is she meets all these strange and horrifying things, But in the process, she learns to value her life more.
Like, she meets a bunch of things that keep trying to kill her. Like, the amount of time she almost drowned is concerning.
Well, one of the characters we meet is Lyndall, and he was Elias's teacher, and he lives in the far north at the Dragon Sanctuary.
I think it's Iceland. He lives in Iceland.
Yeah, they imply that it's someplace like Iceland, but I don't think they ever give it a name.
It's a big, like, sanctuary where the last dragons live.
Yeah.
And while she's there, the first thing that happens is she gets picked up by a dragon and dropped in a lake.
Yep. Well, and then she gets thrown to a lake again halfway through the series, but what's really funny is second time she meets Lyndall, she also falls into a lake, and he makes some comment about her always falling into water.
Yeah, because it just keeps happening. She keeps getting almost drowned by not even by people who, like, hate her. It just happens.
Yeah, she just falls in. Would she say, I love the fact that the Fae have decided they've come up with their own name for her. They call her Little Bird or Robin. And I think it's because the robin might be because of the color of her hair.
I think her name in Japanese means, like, little bird.
Oh, it does. I was wondering about that, but I didn't have a chance to look that up.
All the fae creatures and the dragons, even some of the mages call her, like, little bird, little robin. Like, little wind fae that follow her around sometimes.
Oh, the Aerials?
The Aerials. They call her our little robin.
Yeah.
And then this big elderly dragon that she meets in episode 3, his name is Nevin.
I love Nevin.
He calls her little bird. And they make a lot of talk about how she should, like, learn to spread her own wings and stuff like that. And it's just so nice.
So those are our two main characters. And they are navigating this world of magic that kind of lives side by side with ours, but separate. Because the fae don't like the modern world.
And I think a lot of people just don't really see the fae.
Yeah, they also don't see them. But I love the fact that you have the church has sent somebody to keep an eye on Elias, and Elias does errands for the church, and the Queen of Fairy calls him, like, the whatever of the foreign religion or something, and I love the fact that the church is, like, accepted by the Fae, but hated by them at the same time. it's like this rough relationship, because I also get the feeling that Simon, the priest, might be the closest thing that Elias actually has to a friend.
And even then, half the time, whenever Simon says something he doesn't like, Elias just goes, die.
Die. I love the English voice actor for Elias when he does that. It is so deadpan perfect.
Like, literally every single time somebody insults him, which he gets insulted a lot.
Yeah, no, Lyndall insults him.
Almost no one takes him seriously. Yeah. The only one who takes him seriously is Chise, and even then she pokes fun at him sometimes, and he just responds, just die.
Die.
I love Elias, man.
This world that we have with the church, with the fae, with the modern world.
See, what I like is that it's really obvious that the modern world and the fae world are pretty separate, but they're also really, like, interwoven. Like, you can tell that the fae have an effect on the world.
And that they've also created, you have the magesses, which are like Elias, and then you have
Alchemists,
which I also saw called sorcerers someplace. So I don't know quite what the difference they did between them. But the alchemists apparently bend the rules of nature. And I love this definition. And the magesses break the rules of nature.
From what I understand, the alchemists, they manipulate the natural world and the magic and stuff all on their own. While the mages sort of just borrow the power of like, fae creatures to just do whatever they want.
Now, granted, they can do a lot more damage, and there's a lot more cost if they mess up.
Yeah, which is why they're called, like, rule breakers, because, you know, if you break a rule, there's going to be some kind of cost.
Yeah, there's going to be a consequence for that. And in Chise's case, she is in training to be a magus, but her problem is that because she's a slaybeggy, and because she is constantly bringing in magic, and the fae are her friends and more than willing to give her magic.
Friends in quotation marks.
She keeps overdoing the magic and being unconscious for weeks at a time.
Like, I think one of the first instances of this happening is when she's asked to, like, try and shape this little crystal in the shape of a flower, and she kind of overtakes the whole room.
Yeah, she creates an entire field of poppies in one room.
And what's her name? The
Angelica.
Angelica. Elias's friend?
Maybe frenemy?
Acquaintance. She is not afraid to tell him off, and she tells him off quite a bit. Listen, Elias does not understand humans, and he doesn't know how to properly conduct himself around them, and it's a little... But she makes fun
of it. Well, and that's the weird thing, is he brings her home, and this is the part where the show does get a little weird, but I kind of chalk it up to Elias not really understanding.
He just doesn't know.
He just calls things things. And I don't think he actually means what he says. He says?
Because in the beginning, her context, in the beginning,
the reason why this is called Ancient Magus Bride is because he brings her home and says, I'm going to make you my bride. And then he goes, let's go on a honeymoon. Well, the honeymoon is literally doing errands for the church, dealing with Fae that have gone off the walls. So
not really. I think he heard the word somewhere and heard that it meant like some kind of strong human bond. It was like, you know what?
Like traveling after you get together or something. I don't know.
He knows what they mean. Yeah. He really doesn't.
Which is weird because he's like 200 and some, who knows how old
he is.
He's
centuries old, but it's pretty kind of obvious that he doesn't interact with the human world that much.
No, obviously he's not.
He's kind of a recluse, really. He just talks to the Fae, and the Fae are... not great judges of character.
No, they have their own way of doing things.
They've got their own way, and they're not.
So yeah. Even though it's like he calls her a bride and this and that, there's really not any of that shown until
he says like he's. I more believe when he says he's going to make her his apprentice.
Yeah, that I more believe.
A lot more sense.
And I also wonder how much of him making her his apprentice is. The accusation that he just took her to learn more about humans, that he doesn't really care about her, or if he actually does partially care over time.
I think they discuss this in the later half. I won't say exactly how, but they do actually mention. Okay. He does bring up exactly what he kind of expects from her.
Okay.
And it's actually kind of sweet, not gonna lie, but...
All right. But, and Chisei is looking at this and, like, just says pretty... And her thought is, I have never had a home. I've never had a home with somebody who accepts me for what all this weirdness is. I've never had a home with somebody who can explain and train me in all of this weirdness. And she kind of pretty much imprints on him like a baby bird.
Yeah.
A little too hard.
Yeah, it goes from pretty sweet to kind of sad to a little concerning.
Yeah, which I love the fact, again, and I need to stop saying that phrase. I appreciate that this anime also addresses that to a certain extent because two other characters, Angelica and Renfried, the
alchemist. We meet him episode 5, I believe.
Yeah. They both approach, Angelica approaches Chisei about how she is too dependent on Elias and maybe she should go out and do more stuff without him to, you know,
Gain some independence.
She's not like, you know, she's not saying you have to move away, you have to do this, because she can see that this is actually partially a good thing for Chisei because she is more alive now than when she first met. But I like the fact that she's like, you need to get more experience. And Renfried is like, you need to let her go to school. Go away, go to school. She's still only 16. She should go to school.
And Renfried just outright like tells Elias that he is not doing this right.
Yeah, he is not doing this right. Needs to give her some space.
Elias doesn't exactly handle that well.
No, but Elias, again, is dealing, I think, with emotions he's never had before.
Yeah, because the way they show it is that they're both teaching each other something.
Yeah.
And both for the better and for the worse.
The worse. So I'm looking forward to the second part of the first half because I want to see how that develops, whether or not they take the advice, which you did drop the hint that something does happen with a school, so.
Yeah, in season 2.
In season 2, okay.
In season 2. But they still actually do quite a bit. Chisei does have, like, her own little adventures.
But beyond the relationship of Elias and Chisei, I believe what makes this anime the most amazing thing and... just amazingly gorgeous are all the fae creatures.
Oh my god.
This is where this show is absolutely amazing because you can tell the person who wrote this manga actually really likes English folklore and fairy tales.
There's so many little things.
Tons of little things. What would you like to start with?
Can we talk about the dragons?
All right, let's talk about the dragons.
And Nevin. I talked about Nevin before, but...
So the dragons, there's all different kinds of dragons. Using terms I've never heard before, and I didn't have time to research this more.
I believe they're just kind of like words that...
They're their own words?
Their own words, I believe.
Okay. The fact that Chisei at first is like, oh, should I be worried about dragons trying to eat me or anything like that? And Elias is like, oh no, we killed those off a long time ago. And I'm like, okay, we only have the pacifist dragons now.
So the dragons are pretty much in a super endangered species.
They're super endangered. And Chisei comes to the Valley of the Dragons, and she meets three baby dragons, and they start playing. And it's like, one dragon's like, yay, let's go fly and jump off this cliff and fly. And Chisei is like, I can't fly. And of course, one of the other dragons can't either. So they have a running race, and it's like, Chisei, and one of the dragons is super fast, and of course, all the others aren't, and they're all...
There's like the three dragons. It's like a wyvern-looking dragon who can fly mm-hmm. around. It's like a velociraptor.
And one that's more like tank-looking, more like a Nevin type dragon.
It looks like a boulder. Like
yeah, a pile of rocks.
And that's what Nevin is.
And so after this race, she's so exhausted, she leans against Nevin, and she begins talking with him.
Like,
and
mentally.
And he is a super old dragon, and he is getting ready to die.
And the thing that happens with his species is that when these types of dragons die, their bodies become boulders and trees.
And part of the landscape. So they actually kind of live on as part of the actual earth, which I find really cool.
Nevin explicitly tells her that dragons don't see death in the same way humans do. They see it as like another way to go into life.
And they don't fear death because of that. And I love this because Chisei, she fears death, but also doesn't love life. But because she doesn't, and he's trying to explain to her that because dragons live their life to the fullest, they don't fear their lives, they enjoy their lives, and they live their lives to the fullest. That is why they do not fear death. And death for them is not an ending, it's a beginning as being part of something else. And I love that first lesson for Chisei about learning to live life and enjoy it. Because this is the first time where she's starting to get that message. And Nevin takes her on a memory of flying as he dies, and it's like his last memory, and he dies in this really happy moment.
And like she promises to make her first wand out of the branch.
Yeah, because he offers, he says, please come and make your wand out of the branches of my tree. And
like,
she promises.
The whole conversation is just so gorgeous.
It is.
Sweet.
And that last flight, and then he dies, and this huge giant tree grows, and it's
I cried.
I cried
like a baby.
This is one of the few anime that I cried at, which is why I give it a 5.
And this is episode 3.
I know. We are diving into the deep end.
I only knew Nevin for like 5 minutes, and I'm already crying over him.
So Nevin does come back later.
We
get to meet him in like the place between living
in
the
dead.
It's sort
of like a limbo.
A limbo, because she has just made her wand out of his tree, and she's like talking to him and trying to figure out what she wants to do. And it's like,
and he just sort of reminds her of the first lesson that he taught her, because she's actually kind of spiraling a little bit while she's doing so.
Yeah.
And just, Nevin is
the best.
He's the best. He's like, and I love his voice. In the English dub, his voice, it's the way he calls her little bird, it's just so sweet. It's like an old grandpa. Mm-hmm. It's like a wise old grandpa.
So the next arc we have after he goes to the Land of the Dragons is they are sent to deal with an issue that the King of the Cats is having.
The cat arc.
The cat arc, which I will say I think is possibly the darkest arc.
So far,
although
we haven't gotten to the second half.
Yeah, there is a reason why I saw this listed as fantasy horror, and this would be the explanation of that.
Yeah. So not all mages and alchemists are nice,
and not all fairy tales are bright and shiny.
Yeah. So let's just say that when the issue with the cats is that there's this big mass of like pure evil, like in the
center
of
they
this
call
light.
It. What do they call it? I can't remember what it's called, but it was just this roiling mass of darkness and evil.
And ick. It's like
goop. And ick. And nobody can see it, but unless you can have the sight and can see Fae. And so Chisei can definitely see it. And the King of Cats, from generation to generation, cats in this actually do have 9 lives.
They get wiser and smarter as they live each life.
And so they can talk and so on. And the King of Cats, their job is to pretty much give up several of their lives to keep this darkness bound on this island. But the current King of Cats has summoned them because she is getting old and getting ready to die, and the darkness is getting stronger than they can hold it. It is starting to break
Elias
out through the bounds.
So they bring in Elias and Chisei. Mm-hmm. And we find out what the origin of this darkness is.
Yeah, let's just say if you're a cat lover, it's really dark.
Yeah, and also if you're just a person lover, I guess.
Oh, God. Yeah, we get to meet what I believe is going to be the main villain of the show in here. which is a wandering alchemist who is who knows how old, but looks like a child and doesn't seem to age.
His name is Cartaphilus.
Or Joseph,
whichever one. He doesn't like being called Cartaphilus.
No, he gets really angry when you call him that. But he is attempting to make some kind of elixir of immortality, I believe. And that's what leads to him tricking this poor man into doing horrific things to try and save his wife. And in the end, he kills her, and his despair and anger turns into the evil malice.
And the way he kills her is just kind of horrifying. I won't go into the detail, but it's incredibly abrupt.
This show is rated TV-14, and this was one of the parts where I was like, yeah, you're edging up into 16-18 territory. This is
and
dark.
Also, on the topic of making an elixir of immortality, it's, knowing what I know, I won't say why, but it's both yes and no to that.
Okay. Yeah, because they have not quite...
He is experimenting with, like, life and death magic.
So that's our third arc. Our fourth arc is... Second arc. Our third arc task that he has is that there is a churchyard where apparently there is possibly a fae or spirit who is killing people. They're not sure. So they're sent to investigate.
And this is where we meet my second favorite character.
This is where we meet the church grim, which is where we know that this person has done more research into English folklore than most people. Because I did not know about church scrims until a year ago, because I was listening to a folklore podcast.
Well, I always knew about church scrims.
Well, I knew about black dogs. I did not know that they were called church scrims.
Yeah, I actually knew about them for a while because, you know, fantasy nerd. But
yeah,
really cool.
Well, I'm a fantasy nerd too. I just never ran into them for some reason. But yeah, church scrims are actually a real thing in folklore. And in some cases, it's said that they purpose... which this is really sad, and it's not known if it was true or not. Again, folklore. They would actually purposely kill a dog and bury it at the foundation of the church to become the church grim.
Because a church grim's job is to guard these, like, this graveyard.
The graveyard.
Church graveyards, and chase all tomb robbers to the gates of hell.
Well, and also to chase the devil, too, according to some stories. And pretty much just chase anything evil out of the graveyard and protect the church and the graveyard.
And that is exactly what Ruth is doing, really.
Yeah, except for he's not aware that he's a church grim yet.
He
until
thinks
the
he's
very
a person.
End. He actually thinks he's a person, not even a dog. But yeah, he has a really sad story because his girl, who he considered his sister, she had red hair and she was horribly teased by all the other kids. And so one day they were chasing her. She ran to the road and got hit by a carriage and died. And he refused to leave her gravesite, so he died.
He stayed by her grave waiting for her to
wake up because he thought she was sleeping.
It was really sad.
And he pretty much became a ghost dog that evolved into a church grim.
And he ended up becoming a church grim, but he still never realized that his quote unquote sister was dead.
Yeah. And
until Chisei.
And then Chisei comes and they resolve the whole issue and fight Cartaphilus again because, of course, he's up to nasty shenanigans.
He brings up these weird chimera corpse monsters.
Yeah, part praying mantis, part person. He is really a terrible person.
Yeah, because also the part praying mantis, part person, part centipede thing is wearing the face of Ruth's dead sister, and that's terrifying.
Yeah, as I said, this show could very easily at times be labeled as a horror.
A lot of things happen during this arc, actually.
At the end of this, Ruth decides to become... Chisei's
familiar,
and they're bonded together, which is just awesome because
and throughout the rest of it, like, Ruth is basically just like an overprotective big brother.
Yeah, and sometimes the voice of reason,
pretty much.
So
I mean, he always puts her before everything else, but he does kind of convince
her. He's like, are you sure you want to do this? So the other part with the fae that I really liked was meeting Titania. I can't say this. Oberon and Titania.
The queen and
king of the fairies. So Titania is, she is portrayed as this regal tall woman in a black gown riding a white donkey. And when she arrives, it's like the entire forest becomes quiet. This weird, unearthly music starts playing, and the Spriggan who's walking in front is banging his staff on the ground, pretty much chanting some kind of rhyme about, you know, being quiet, bowing down, and here's the queen of the...
Just a very ethereal
Very
scene.
Ethereal. It is amazing. It is probably one of my top three scenes in the show.
Like, the introduction in general is like, you know this lady.
This lady
important.
Has power, is important, and she is here and not going to take any guff.
And then her husband shows up.
And then her husband shows up.
He's an idiot.
Oh. Well, I don't think he's as much an idiot as he portrays.
Yeah, but he kind of breaks the tension.
He does. He does. Yeah, I thought it was interesting that she chose to portray Oberon as part fawn.
He's like a satyr, kind of.
Yeah, he's a satyr type thing, which is not traditionally the way Oberon is shown. So I thought that was kind of an interesting...
I kind of like it, actually.
I did, too, because it does definitely show the difference between their two attitudes towards life.
Yeah, it definitely makes him appear more playful. Yeah. Because of, like, you know, how satyrs are in, like, Greek mythology and the way, you know, deer are shown.
And he bounces around a lot more, and he's just... And he brings a lot more levity, but I have a feeling in some ways he could be more dangerous than the Fairy Queen.
They're both dangerous.
They're both like, very dangerous.
They're nice, but there's always like a little hidden edge to all of their words.
Yeah.
Like, you know that if you say the wrong thing, you were probably not getting out of this forest.
No. Well, and that's like, she kind of mentions them coming to a feast in Fairyland, and Spriggan doesn't like Elias. He doesn't like humans. And he's like, don't come, even if you're invited. And Elias is like, I have no intention of it, because they might not come back.
Yeah, apparently going to the land of the fairies is like a thing that you really shouldn't be doing.
You don't do it on a whim.
You
do it very carefully. And that's true. And the thing I found funny, though, about Titania is they call her the Queen of Fairies and also the Queen of Albion, which is an old word for Britain. And of Tir na n Og, which I found weird because that's the Irish land of the fairies. And they don't really bring in anything else Irish in this.
I suppose it's like, maybe they explore more in season two.
Maybe, but because as I said, a lot of this is very British. Like even Titania and Oberon, are medieval names for the queen and king of the fairies. Or not medieval, but Shakespearean time era. Because that's the names that Shakespeare uses in Midsummer Night's Dream for them.
I guess she's just kind of... The author is, like, kind of, like, combining, like, certain aspects.
Yeah.
So that it all, like, coincides and stuff like that.
Well, okay, we are almost out of time here. So real quick, let's talk about maybe one more scene. We gotta talk to Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Chisei gets her wand. Which is actually looks more like a walking stick, to be honest, with a bird on top. And she talks to Nevin, and she decides what she wants to do is go back to Elias. So Chisei being Chisei and not thinking things through, and because the Fae are like, we like you, they go ahead and assist
her
in this.
They enable her
on not thinking things through.
She gets the help of two fire Fae, I believe.
That might have been three of them.
Two or three.
But yeah, the fire Fae show up, and she literally transforms into a giant firebird.
A giant flaming phoenix.
And she
flies over the cloud line.
Over the clouds, and they have her like diving in and out of the clouds, and occasionally her human form slightly comes back, and then she's engulfed in flame again, and it is just amazing.
Like, you'll just see the upper half of her, and then her arms are just descending into wings of flame.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
And it's amazing. And then she ends her flight by literally diving out of the sky and landing in Elias's arms in her human form. And it is the perfect ending to a parter thing, because that is like the perfect cliffhanger. Now, of course, immediately after she passes out, and then she wakes up in bed, and there's all these fae creatures like glued to the window, and she looks out, and Elias is holding one of these fae creatures that looks like a cotton ball, and he says, "Oh, it's the wolf season," and I'm just like, well, that took all the majesticness out of this.
Yeah, the new episode immediately after it is very mundane, but then it goes into like a... Then it gets serious.
Yeah. I like some of that mundane, though, because you have to see the fun part of the Fae world
One thing they do frequently is like they'll have like a super serious or majestic moment, and then it'll cut to like a low resolution art style with like a little goofy thing. Like Elias's like skull face gets simplified.
When he goes chibi. Yeah.
Like I think after she lands as a firebird and she like passes out, I was like, Chisei? He like panics for a little bit. He goes a little chibi.
Well, and part of what I think makes Chisei come back and makes that greeting so heartfelt was the fact that he, at one point, just in the previous episode, was like, I can't seem to get warm with her not here. Like, he has a fire going in the middle of summer, and he's like, I'm still cold.
There's a fire going, and yet I feel cold.
Yeah. Which, it shows that he has gotten bonded to her in a way,
and
also.
And I should mention that throughout this thing, Silver Lady, which we haven't mentioned, she's like sort of like a maid of the house, but not
we are
really.
Running out of time. There's so many awesome characters.
But there's a
characters.
Character named Silver Lady, and she's sort of like the caretaker of the house, and she hangs out with Elias. She doesn't talk much,
but the whole time he's talking about how, you know, the house feels cold, she's giving him very concerned looks.
Yeah, she's obviously, she cares about the people in her house.
And like, everyone's kind
of, I mean,
concerned,
and we don't
really
also have time to talk about the Will-O-The-Wisp, who is amazing. I loved him.
Blue Flame. Or like the lady in the garden, the fake.
Oh,
the
Lyanna and She.
The Lyanna and She.
Yeah.
And Alice.
Which that's another Irish fairy, actually, Lyanna and She. So they are pulling in some Irish stuff.
They pull in a bit more, actually, the more it goes.
Okay. I'm wondering eventually if they, in the manga, if they ever wind up going like to Japan or something and pulling in more of the fae from there.
Briefly.
So.
In the second season.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up things. Any last comment you want to make?
The show is absolutely gorgeous, and I am willing to overlook the more iffy parts of it because everything else about it is amazing.
I concur. The show is amazingly beautifully animated. There are moments that will make you cry. There are moments that will take your breath away. And I don't have as many problems with the iffy thing because, again, not human and human, it feels less weird.
It feels less weird. And also, I just don't think it leans too far into it.
No,
it
doesn't.
They barely mention it.
They barely do after the first couple episodes. Occasionally, Elias will say something about her. They'll talk about, oh, I want to see you in your wedding dress and stuff like that.
They'll bring it up, but like once, but then everything else is just like...
Well, although the fairy king and queen, as they're walking away, are saying, Oberon's like, shall we bet on whether or not they have children? And the fairy queen goes, oh no, we should bet on how many. So they have plans.
Oh god.
They have plans.
But most of all, it's just like the relationship is very difficult to describe, but it's both really nice and really scary.
I like it because it's complicated.
It's very complicated.
It's complicated. And they're not trying to go for easy answers on it.
No, they're not.
And maybe that's why it doesn't, the age gap and the weirdnesses don't bother me as much.
The main drawback is that they teach each other a lot of things and they learn from each other.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they also learn some not so great things about each other too.
In the end,
it's nice.
It's nice.
it's nice.
Beautiful.
It's nice. They have some genuinely sweet moments.
Yeah. All right, well, we need to wrap it up there. We could probably talk about the show for another 2, 3, 4 hours.
Yeah,
but
when I say they go deep into like the fairy lore, they go deep.
Yeah, no, and she
there
definitely
is so much.
She pulls from Shakespeare, she pulls from other folklore,
from, like Celtic, British, but there are some hints of like Irish and Scottish.
Well, British Isles would include Scotland and part of Ireland.
Yeah,
and it used to include all of Ireland.
Welsh, actually, they mentioned some. I think they go to in the second half. They mention like certain places in Wales.
The Twilith Teg.
Think.
I can't pronounce Welsh. Welsh is a bad language to try and pronounce.
No vowels.
No vowels and lots of L's. Anyway, we're probably going to cut out a whole bunch of that. Well, thank you for joining us today, and we did ramble on a little much about the fae and the fairy here. But
there's just so much to talk
about.
I know.
But if you have any thoughts or comments about this episode, please email me at the email in the notes below. And we are going to be having a blast of a time next recording because we will have Mr. Keith back on.
Yay.
So we're going to squash him into the tiny closet because a little... In real life here, Mr. Keith is like 6.5 feet tall, and this room is tiny.
It's basically a broom closet.
Nah.
Storage closet. Both of us barely fit.
Best recording ever is in a storage closet. Anyway, and we are going to be discussing probably one of the most popular anime out there.
I'm not looking forward to it.
Yep. And if you want to guess what it is, I'll just drop this hint. There was a live action of it dropping, and I'm very excited to see what it looks like.
I've heard a lot of talk about it.
Yep, a lot of talk. Anyway, with that, thank you for listening, and have fun watching a lot of anime.
Yeah, watch this show.
Yes, watch Ancient Magus Sprite. I don't know about the second season, but definitely the first 12 episodes, watch away. It's fantastic.
Whole first season, watch away.
All right. And with that, goodbye.
Goodbye.